everyone, and welcome to the VookCast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. I'm Angelo Valdivia, and with me this week are Oliver Brandt.
Hey, Angelo. Good to be back.
Hello, and Paul Roberts.
Hi, Angelo and Ollie. It's also good to be back.
It's great to have you back, Paul. We've got a great episode for you this week, all about Splatfest making a return, the four-month-long Summer Game Fest, May the 4th, a new Nook Spot update. But first, 100 Japanese households are getting Super Famicom systems to encourage kids to stay home during this social distancing period. Now, this was really interesting. This came apparent a couple of days after the last episode, but the Japan Retro Game Association allowed application for households with children under 16 to enter in a draw of Super Famicom systems being delivered out, of up to 100 Super Famicom systems being delivered out. They ended up getting about 54,630 entries. That's an enormous number for only 100 consoles. And the consoles were shipped out on April 27th. So the last episode was 2 weeks ago, today being the 3rd of May. The 3rd of May. So what was that, like the 21st or something like that of April? So it was about a week or so that maybe that they were running this. Each package included a copy of Donkey Kong Country, which I think is called Super Donkey Kong in Japan, and Final Fantasy VI. Guys, how do you feel about this? Like, is this something that you guys have seen before? An organization giving away free consoles to encourage children to stay home?
I mean, it's certainly not a common thing, is it? And I don't think it's the kind of thing that we'd really see very often if it weren't for, you know, the whole COVID-19 situation. Because, I mean, like, you know, it's always, you know, get your kids out of the house, get them down to the park, get them playing sports. So it's a little bit interesting to see an organization say, hey, we're going to encourage people to stay inside and play video games. But obviously it's a super important thing for people to be staying inside right now. And, as you know, a lot of people with young children are having a tougher time than others right now. Just having to stay inside and entertain their children, you know, 24/7. So I think it's a really, really good initiative that is really going to help a lot of people.
What about you, Paul?
Yeah, it's really neat that it's happening, although they should really be giving them Donkey Kong Country 2 if they want to keep them indoors for a while. But it's a good choice of games and just a neat story with everything going on.
Yeah, do we think that it's a little, that these six or under 16-year-old kids, so say like 13, 14-year-olds, are going to be a little disappointed that it's not a brand spanking new PlayStation 4? Instead, they're getting a Super Famicom from, what, 30 years ago now?
I mean, obviously, it would be great if it was a brand new Nintendo Switch, but I mean, like, all of these games have, like, well, most of them, I'm not going to say every Super Nintendo game has held up incredibly well, but most of them have held up remarkably well. Donkey Kong Country, I noticed, like, Final Fantasy VI is one of them there. I know that Super Mario World was included. So, like, they're all just fantastic games that deserve to be experienced by the modern generation. And, like, unless Nintendo's going to throw Donkey Kong Country and its sequels up on the Nintendo Switch Online service anytime soon, this may be the only opportunity that, like, some of these people get to play Donkey Kong Country. So, yeah.
Hmm. I think it's a really cool idea, especially since, parents of these kids are probably going to want to have a look at some of these games as well and, you know, take them right back to their childhoods, give them something to do together at home, which is a really neat idea. Ollie, would you like to take the reins for this next item on the list?
All right. So this is a bit of a strange situation, also somewhat of a serious one. Nintendo confirmed last week, I believe it was, time means absolutely nothing. It was on the 24th of April. So Nintendo put out a statement first in Japanese and then followed up in an English statement from Nintendo of Europe, that 160,000 NNID accounts have been compromised in some way since early April. So for those who don't know, NNID accounts are the accounts that you use for your 3DS and your Wii U, but not the ones that you use for your Switch. Having said that, you can link your NNID to your Switch to share your wallet between the two storefronts. Because they do have separate storefronts, you know, 3DS, Wii U, Switch, are all separately. So if you wanted to share the amount of funds in between them, or even share the payment methods between them, you could link those accounts to do it. Because of that, there are Switch accounts that have been compromised, and it's something that you probably would have seen over social media, sort of in early April, sort of to mid-April. People saying that, you know, somebody's spent $300 on V-Bucks on their Nintendo Switch account, and being very concerned about that. The Nintendo stayed pretty quiet on this for a while. They're still investigating it. But right now, what we know is that there are 160,000 accounts out there that have been compromised in some way. Some of those will be connected to Switch accounts, some of them won't be, so you really don't have much to be concerned about if you don't have an NNID account attached to your Switch account. But if you do, it's advised that you set up two-step verification on your Nintendo Switch account, which is super easy to do. Just go to accounts.nintendo.com and follow the prompts there. People who were potentially affected will have automatic password resets on both their Nintendo Switch account and their NNID account. For people in Australia, you cannot change your NNID password in a browser. You have to actually do it on the console itself. If you no longer have the console, my understanding is that the advice is to call up Nintendo Australia's support line and either close the account or have them, you know, de-verify the current password on that. So it's a bit of a scary situation for some people who are concerned. But if you have, you know, the other thing is Nintendo has disabled logging into a Nintendo Switch account using an NNID. So even if your account was compromised, they can't log into your account. They can't change your details in there. Nintendo have said that your if your account was affected, the perpetrators, I guess, would be the right way to call them. You know, whoever's accessing your account may have access to your name, the nickname of your account, your date of birth, gender, country or region, and email address. But they stressed in all of the statements that they put out that credit card and PayPal details and just payment details in general were not affected at all. Those are still 100% secure. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but the first thing I did when I saw this was immediately unlink my 3DS from my Switch, because, like, it's nice to have that, you know, that shared wallet, but at this point, it's just too much up in the air.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I did the same thing. At least for my 3DS, I didn't actually do it for my Wii U yet. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the way that Nintendo's handled it, obviously, has been very quick, very swift. The numbers are relatively small in terms of who's been affected compared to something like the PlayStation attack, 9 years ago now, where they shut down the PSN for, like, a month or a month and a half or something like that, and that was millions of people who were affected. Yeah, it's a far cry from an event like that, but yeah, it's pretty good that Nintendo was able to shut it down, the issue that is, and even like really very carefully stressed that it was specifically the older account systems, not the newer account systems, that were affected and things. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, and, like, there was a lot of confusion around this when it was originally, you know, when the news originally broke. Part of that was because it was the Japanese statement came out first, so a lot of people were working off some pretty dodgy Google Translates. But they did absolutely stress that it is the Nintendo Network ID that is compromised and not the Nintendo account itself. It's a confusing name situation, but your Nintendo account is the one that you use to log on to My Nintendo. It's the one that you use to log on to your Switch. So, yeah, just really want to stress that, like, if you only have a Switch and you don't have a 3DS or you don't have a Wii U, or if those accounts aren't connected, you're 100% fine. In any case, probably still set up two-step verification anyway, because it's super easy to do. Install an app like Google Authenticator, Authy, Microsoft two-step verification, and then all you have to do is open up your phone and put in a six-digit code whenever you want to log in. It's really not that much of a hassle. So, yeah, what about you, Paul?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was going to say that with the Authenticator stuff, it's even, say, like with a Microsoft one, or at least using it from my iPhone, it will come up automatically. So you don't even need to sit there and type out a six-digit thing if that's really going to stop you from a two-step verification system. But yeah, it's definitely worth doing. Like, you should do it on everything you have anyway. But
absolutely. I just want to like stress that, like, that if you have like a password manager or a manager already, most of those have some sort of authenticator app built into it, so check those out as well. I know a lot of people use, like, I can't remember the name of it, completely blanking on it, but there's some popular password,
like One Password.
Yeah, One Password is the main one. They do have an authenticator as part of that service. So, like, you know, your passwords are already there. You may as well, you know, make sure all your accounts are safe too.
Yeah. All right, let's move on then. So, Splatoon 2 is getting a new Splatfest, a one-off Splatfest returning on May 23 this year. So the mayonnaise versus ketchup event will return at roughly 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7:30 a.m. Australian Central Time, or 6 a.m. Australian Western Time on Saturday, May 23. The event will last for 48 hours, so it'll finish 48 hours from that time on Monday morning. And it's interesting because we haven't had a Splatfest since July last year, but it's a pretty good initiative to just kind of like bring that game back out of hibernation again. I don't even know if the game really has a strong community behind it like it once did. We'll have a quick chat about that in a moment. But also in tandem with this will be, or is, that Splatoon 2 currently has a free trial running until Wednesday, May 6th. So you've got a couple of days left to jump on board if you're interested in playing Splatoon 2 and you haven't bought it yet, which gives you access to Turf War, Ranked Battle, and Salmon Run, all playable against people with the full game. So if you get yourself the trial version of the game, you'll be able to play online with people who have the full game. Yeah, guys, how do we feel about this? Do you guys still play Splatoon 2? Have you completely fallen off? What's going on here?
Well, when this was announced, I had a friend message me and say, hey, let's play Splatoon. So I have played it recently. But before that, there was probably a 6 or 7 month gap in between it, just because, you know, we had things like Smash and Super Mario Maker and all of these other things come out that, like, really took the attention off Splatoon.
Animal Crossing,
of course. huge one. But I mean, like, this is a really nice little thing to bring back. You know, I kind of wish that the free trial was running during the Splatfest.
Yeah.
It's a little bit disappointing. It feels like, I don't want to accuse Nintendo of anything, but it feels a little bit cash grabby to, like, say you have this thing, but if you want to play in the actual event, you'll have to pay for it. And, like, they have discounted it, so, you know, that's a nice thing to do, but it would have been nicer if the free trial was during the Splatfest. But it is, like, it's a return to the very first Splatfest that Splatoon 2 had, which is also, you know, mayonnaise versus ketchup. I believe, but, like, don't quote me on this, that in Australia/North America, mayonnaise won. So it'll be interesting to see if ketchup can bring it back this time. Or I might be completely wrong and ketchup won and mayonnaise could bring it back. Who knows? It was, like, 3 years ago now, so...
Yeah. Oh, gee, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. Back in 2017. but, yeah, I mean, it's nice that, like, we're getting, like, even if it's a one-off, you know, who knows if they'll bring it back if this is super successful. People are still playing the game, but I would probably, you know, be a little bit wary of jumping into a public lobby right away, because in my experience, there are a lot of high-level players that will absolutely stomp you. Because obviously, you know, the people that play the game the most are the ones that are most likely to stick around. So, you know, you might have a little bit of trouble. But I mean, if you do buy the game and and, you know, have a go of it. There's a very robust story mode. Quite cheap. I think it's in the, like, $25 story DLC that really is fantastic at preparing you for competitive play. So I think it's a really, really good idea to bring it back. And I hope that they continue doing it.
Paul?
Yeah, it's a game that I fell off of a bit before Ollie. It's the whole sense of time thing. It's, I thought that Splatfest only ended not that long ago as opposed to nearing a year ago. It's, I definitely got more into the single player stuff. It's also where the only person's fault is my own, as opposed to dragging an entire team down with me. So, like, if you are jumping into the demo stuff, it's even worth it just for checking that out. Well, does it include the story mode, or is it just
I think solely? It's just the competitive modes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame.
But, you know, it's something.
Yeah, well, there is all that stuff there, like, even if it doesn't, it's not quite like other games where the campaign things, like, it'll only take you 2 hours and it's just there to try and sort of suck you in. That's like, oh no, it's not just a online stuff. It's, you can do this. It's got plenty of content, even if you sort of don't feel that you're that great at the game.
And it is worth noting that, like, a couple of things. First of all, is that everybody's free trial for Nintendo Switch Online has been reset. So even if you've had the 7-day free trial for Nintendo Switch Online before, you can get another 7 days completely for free. All of the like progress and leveling up and all of that online will be retained if you do decide to buy the full game after this this week of free Splatoon. So, you know, you're not really missing out on much if you decide to jump in. It's 100% free because you've got a free trial again.
Yeah. Right. I'm going to handball back over to Ollie for the next one.
All right. So this is a bit of a lighter story compared to the last one. Well, depending on who you are, really. So Indivisible, an action RPG game that was... you know, pushed to the forefront of people's minds all the way back in 2016, I think, in a very successful Indiegogo campaign, released on the Switch last week. It was a bit of a surprise to us at Vux, and it was an even bigger surprise to the developers who worked on it, who were not aware that it was releasing. So it was originally scheduled to launch on the 28th of April, which it did. But it was intended to be pushed back to early May to wait for a day one patch that, you know, ironed out some bugs, boosted the resolution. So, you know, just regular day one patch stuff. The game released on the 28th anyway. And the project lead, Mike Zymont, tweeted out, like, hey, you feel like you missed, like, the announcement? You're not alone. Our team found out because people on Twitter sent us congratulations. He then bought the game to confirm that it had actually released and that it was the latest version of the game, which it was not. The day one patch still has not come out for the game yet. That's still scheduled for sometime in early May. The publisher 505 Games has said that the release was a surprise to them as well. There was apparently an error with the tool provided from Nintendo that allows you to publish to the eShop. We've seen this with a couple games in the past that weren't really supposed to release when they did, but, you know, it happens from time to time. We don't know if it's a problem with the program itself or if it was user error. All we know is that there was an error with the tool and they published before they were supposed to. So the game still doesn't have its day one patch. Which will come out at some point. Indiegogo backers will have to wait until that happens to get their copies because it's just not possible to generate codes for it until, you know, it's considered a 1.0 release. So it's a bit of a weird situation. I don't know if anything has happened like this so publicly in the past. Usually when things like this happen, everybody sort of goes into quiet mode. So to see, you know, the project lead quite obviously upset on Twitter, he did say, you know, this launch does not represent the quality standards of Lab Zero, which is the developers, and said, you know, it wasn't us. So yeah, it's something very public that we don't usually get to see because of this little mess up. What do you guys think of it?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be such a as much of a problem as what happened with Cooking Mama, as we talked about in the last episode. But yeah, it still seems to have had some sort of impact. I mean, I don't know too much about this story. I'm just going off of what you've added here, but yeah, it's unfortunate that it happened, but it seems like it's a mistake. It didn't seem like one side made the choice to push the game out deliberately or anything like that. So it's not quite on the scale of something like Cooking Mama, which is good in a way, I guess.
Initially it did seem a little bit like, it had been published without their permission. There was talk on Twitter from some of the developers on the game that they you know, hadn't had any response from 505 Games. But, you know, the developers are in the US and 505 Games is an Italian-run company, so it was probably just a bit of a time zone thing. I cannot imagine what it would have been like to work at 505 Games and wake up to that many emails. So, yeah, it seems like it was a genuine error on all sides. But my goodness, that's kind of your nightmare. Just to have a game release out of nowhere, you know, you've spent all this time on it. You know, you have marketing plans in place, you have announcements in place, and then just suddenly it's there. Surprise.
Yeah, for sure.
And just having to buy your own game to check that it's actually out is like just not something that anybody should ever have to do. They did note that some of the features that the developers had expected, because this was passed off to a porting house, so it wasn't Mike Zimmer wasn't directly the one porting it to Switch, just because, you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do it yourself if there's other teams that are much, much better at that thing. But they did say that there are some features that he had expected to be in there, so New Game Plus and co-op play and a couple other things that have been added since the game launched on other consoles in October last year. But those will be coming apparently sometime soon. There's no date set for that. But yeah, it's such a strange situation. It seemed like something maybe possibly malicious to begin with, and then 505 came out with their statement and said, hey, we were surprised by this too. So yeah, really, really strange.
Hey, what about you, Paul? Any thoughts?
Yeah, it's a really sucky situation for all parties involved, it seems. It's, yeah, at least it's not a malicious thing that's happened. I guess if you're a backer, it really sucks because there's nothing like having to wait on a code that you know someone could just fork out the money for. And yeah, it's, I guess, a bit of a wait still, but I guess we're in May already, so it should hopefully not be too far off.
And if I remember correctly, we actually did play a little bit of it at PAX Australia in 2018. Luke went to E3 2018 and played it there, but I'm fairly certain it was at PAX Oz in 2018 as well. Again, that was so long ago that it's all a blur for me now. But like
that was in the before time, before coronavirus.
Yeah.
In the old world.
But like I'm like looking at it, it seems familiar, and like I had a smile on my face when I was watching the trailer. So like I assume that when I played it back at PAX 2018, I enjoyed it. So I don't know. Probably like wait a little bit. It is on sale right now. Because, you know, there was supposed to be a pre-order discount. But obviously that didn't happen because the game came out. So, you know, from now until I think it's like the 12th, there is a discount on it. I think it's 20%, so not a crazy amount, but, you know, pick it up, support the developers. They seem like really lovely people. And it looks like an absolutely gorgeous game.
Cool. Alrighty. Last item on the agenda, we'll try to keep this a little shorter because we're pushing for time now. Jeff Keighley will be hosting the Summer Game Fest to deliver a four-month online festival of game announcements and demos. So publishers that are involved in this event will be 2K, Activision, Bandai Namco, Bethesda, Blizzard, Bungie, CD Projekt Red, Digital Extremes, EA, Microsoft, Private Division, Riot Games, Sony, Steam, Square Enix, and Warner Brothers. Notably missing is Nintendo at this point. In a statement to Variety, Keighley said, "When you think about it, the idea of consumers waiting in line to play a game at a booth is antiquated, especially with digital distribution." It's an interesting statement coming from him, considering that he's been in attendance of every E3 that's happened since 95, 96, thereabouts. And he even hosts the opening ceremony of E3. And this year he famously pulled out, or announced that he was famously pulling out of attending E3 before the coronavirus situation had cancelled it. The publishers are meant to be announcing their own events through this time, so over the four-month period, with the finale being the Gamescom Opening Night Live, which is also hosted by Keighley on August 24. To watch any of the streams of the event, they'll be broadcast via Facebook, YouTube, Mixer, Twitch, Twitter, and the publisher's own platforms. What's interesting, though, as mentioned before, is that Nintendo hasn't made any specific announcements about their own event. Considering that E3 is now cancelled, I mean, E3 was set to be a month away from now, and this event will be happening this month, or starting this month. So we're kind of getting into that period where it's expected that companies will start announcing a lot of games and stuff, and Nintendo still hasn't made a peep as to whether or not they're doing their own digital event, like Direct or something completely different, or making an appearance here or whatever. But I guess what could happen is that publishers like 2K, Bandai Namco, Bethesda, Square Enix could make their own Nintendo announcements, like, you know, whether it's bringing old games over, like Square sometimes does with their JRPGs or Final Fantasy games and things, or more, you know, last-gen games ported over to the Switch, like 2K has done with the Bioshock games, XCOM and Borderlands, etc. So, yeah, it's...
Or even new games like Bravely Default 2, which Square Enix has in its pocket.
There we go, yeah. So, you know, maybe not specific, like, you know, big Nintendo blowouts from any of these companies, but, you know, I guess we take what we can get at this point. How do you guys see this going for Nintendo, or at least for the Switch?
I mean, I'm sure that there will be plenty of announcements in that time. Like, everybody's sort of expecting that the sort of console / mobile version of League of Legends by Riot Games is going to get some more information that was expected at E3 this year. So I imagine it will be in this launch. So that'll be quite exciting for, you know, fans of MOBAs, because the only one that was on Switch shut down a couple months ago. I'm not expecting too much. These are pretty big names that tend not to really touch the Switch that much. I mean, Bandai Namco always has something in store for the Switch. Bethesda has been a fantastic supporter so far. I'm looking at some of these things, like, you know, we can be safe in saying that Sony's probably not going to announce something for the Switch. I probably wouldn't expect much from EA apart from, you know, the usual FIFA update that's exactly the same as last year's one for the Switch. But, I mean, it really could be anything from anybody apart from those ones. I mean, even Microsoft has announced things for the Switch in the past. Notably last year, they had Minecraft Dungeons. So, you know.
What if Microsoft announces xCloud coming to Switch?
I mean, that would be pretty big. I mean, we could say the same about Sony and Remote Play. You know, there were weird rumors about that swirling late last year. So, who knows at this point? My only thing is that, like, I could prepare for, you know, a week of E3. But now, like, I'm being told that I have 4 months of reporting to do, and who knows when any of that's going to happen. So it's like, you know, before I could, you know, stock up on a few energy drinks and, you know, power through the week. But now it's 4 months, and it's like, well, you know, EA might not announce their event until, you know, 10 hours before it starts, and then we're all scrambling to do it. I mean, like, I know this is like a very like niche problem, like, you know, Nintendo reporting, but like it's just, I worry that it's gonna wear thin pretty quickly, especially with like how sort of how do I say this without getting political, with how business focused these kind of things tend to be, and you know, money focused these things tend to be, it could get very tiring very quickly.
I think what you need to do, Ollie, to make this easier for yourself is to invest in a fax machine and a beeper. I think that will help you a lot, just to keep yourself up to date. What about you, Paul?
See, just thinking on that, it's also how tiring it'll be with all those leaks, where it's you've got 4 months for people to screw this up, things to show up on like storefronts that's not meant to. It's going to be a tense time for all of that kind of reporting. It's kind of sad that it took a pandemic to make the video game industry sort of go the direction that Nintendo did a while ago with the Nintendo Directs. So they're sort of all set for this. They can keep on plugging on doing what they do and have the other companies announce the games. But it's just, it feels like a really slow game of catch-up they've been forced to make here. Like, it doesn't help that the whole E3 thing was already in a dire situation from its own issues. But, it's going to be interesting to see. I just figured that over that time, Nintendo would, like, all the announcements that they would usually make are just going to happen the way that Nintendo do them, which is also kind of typical that they're very quiet on it too.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, even from Nintendo recently, like, we've seen over the past couple of months, Nintendo just sort of drop stuff out of nowhere. Like, we had a mini Direct that just sort of showed up one night. We've had, like, the second Luigi's Mansion 3 DLC just was announced on Twitter, and hey, it's out now. We had, you know, all of the Animal Crossing things have just been sort of announced on Twitter. And even like the gigantic Super Mario Maker update was just, oh yeah, here it is. By the way, it's coming out tomorrow. Like, there was no lead up to this. So, like, I think it's likely that we're probably just going to see a lot more of that over the sort of months and possibly, you know, up to a year ahead of us. I mean, having said that though, Nintendo walks their own path. So, you know, I expect we're about 2 days away from Nintendo announcing that they're having a live event and inviting everyone to come along.
Yeah, and I look forward to waking up one morning to Nintendo saying, oh yeah, by the way, here's Metroid Prime 4. It was released 2 days ago.
Yeah. But like, just following up on something that Paul said, is that like, it is really interesting to see other companies follow, sort of follow Nintendo's lead on this. So Nintendo set the groundwork for this thing, and we know that, you know, coming up to E3, there's so much crunch that happens in the industry to make that kind of thing work. You know, they're pushing to get demos out. They're pushing for trailers to play on stage, you know, playable sections to have on stage. So just being able to spread that out instead of having that, you know, condensed into a week and everything has to be done by this date, to saying like, hey, any time between May and the end of August is completely fine. I think that's a really positive move for the industry. And I hope that we see similar things happen in the future, because I think that, you know, in the long run, while it's nice to have all those announcements on 1 week in June, it's not a really super healthy situation for the people involved. So I'm really happy to see, you know, a little more wiggle room for these developers.
Okay, let's move away from news and go to our featured topic. So today being May 3rd means that tomorrow, which is hopefully the day when this podcast goes out on Monday, will be May 4th, Star Wars Day. So as a bit of a retrospective to celebrate Star Wars Day, we thought we'd talk about some of our more memorable Star Wars Nintendo experiences. So I'll start off first. So I'm thinking more about games that Star Wars games on Nintendo platforms that have really were exciting to me, particularly things like Shadows of the Empire and Rogue Squadron, which were both Nintendo 64 games. Those are the two Star Wars games that Shadows of the Empire was the first Star Wars game that I'd actually played on a console, I'm pretty sure. I didn't have a Super Nintendo growing up, or at least before I was about 14 or so when I bought one secondhand. So I kind of grew up with Sega consoles, and I didn't have any Star Wars games on that. And my only experience was watching the movies and being really involved in those. But Shadows of the Empire was the first Star Wars game that I played that really told a completely different Star Wars story. And while it doesn't get, like, you know, a great rap these days, it's kind of janky, looks kind of butt ugly, I guess. But at the time, like, it was a game that I really played the heck out of. And I really dug into a lot of the lore and learned a lot about it, and got involved in the wider expanded universe of that particular story, how this was supposed to be like a transmedia Star Wars story that was told outside of the movies, which I thought was really interesting. And then there was also Rogue Squadron, which, you know, again, I didn't grow up with other consoles too much. I didn't grow up with like a PC or anything like that until I was about 13 or 14 again. And playing things like TIE Fighter and X-Wing like later in life was a different experience to being able to play them when they came out. But Rogue Squadron was the first like in-vehicle Star Wars game that I'd ever really played. And yeah, it just absolutely blew my mind, and again, told a completely different story, which I thought was really interesting. Some side stories from the original games. But I want to know some of your Star Wars experiences, guys. Paul, we'll start with you.
Mine would also have been a lot of time with Shadows of the Empire. That was, yeah, part of that whole spanning across all the mediums. Like with the book, it was back then I was reading the Expanded Universe stuff, and this was a book that was meant to be part of, like, it was canon almost as far as anyone was concerned, because it was like, yeah, had a game, had a book, they had a score made, it was all of this stuff, toys. And so, yeah, that sort of meant a bunch to me back at the time. The game was probably one of the weaker parts, but then I haven't gone back and read the book, and some of those old books haven't aged as well as I probably have thought. But then on top of that, some of the more memorable ones are also the Game Boy ones. I played the Star Wars one on that, and it was incredibly tough. I was expecting something along the lines of Super Star Wars from the Super Nintendo era, but no, it was just this really janky old game. So that stuck with me, not necessarily the most positive reason, but it's like I still played the hell out of it because it was Star Wars. And same with Yoda Stories for the Game Boy Color. It was, I couldn't get it on the PC for whatever reason at the time, but I could plug away at this, like I guess a desktop adventure on a Game Boy. It's, yeah, I guess they're the weird memories to have along with all the PC games, because, yeah, there's your TIE Fighter and, like, even the Galactic Battlegrounds one. I'm trying to remember the name of the one that was just Age of Empires, but Star Wars, it's...
Yeah, that was it, Galactic Battlegrounds.
I thought so. It's, yeah, just so much time with all the PC stuff, I actually, it was much rarer to go back. There was, yeah, Rogue Squadron, and as they slowly ran out of space battles that they could have across the series. But that was also great at the time that it wasn't such a cockpit experience where it's like, oh no, you're playing third person, it's a bit more accessible, or at least at my age where I wasn't that great at star fighting games. And then, like, there's a game I won't dig into it too much because I believe it's like Ollie remembered it before I did, but Lego Star Wars, the co-op experience behind that, I spent way too much time, but I'll leave that for Ollie.
Well, yeah, Lego Star Wars, it was gigantic for me. I had never really, I mean, I was into Star Wars, but like by the time that sort of these games Well, by the time really I was old enough to really enjoy those games, I was sort of falling out of it a little bit. Lego Star Wars brought me right back in. I played it on the Nintendo DS, which notably for the time was not really much of a pared back experience. It was pretty much the full game. And it was just incredible. You know, you play through all of the movies and have an absolute blast doing that, and then, you know, you get to slap an alien head on Boba Fett's body with robot legs and give him a lightsaber and a blaster. Like, what's not to like about that? Like, it's dumb and it's silly, and like, obviously all those games, I believe they're all on Switch now. And, you know, there's I think the full, you know, Skywalker saga, Lego Star Wars game coming to Switch as well, and I'm super excited for those. The other one I mentioned is, you know, sort of the elephant in the room here is Star Wars Episode One Racer, which is, you know, nobody really likes to acknowledge that Star Wars Episode One exists in the first place. but my God, we used to rent a Nintendo 64 from Blockbuster, which is just, you know, all of us showing our age here. And, you know, we used to rent a Nintendo 64 from Blockbuster and, you know, games like Star Wars Episode One Racer. And it was not a great game. Like, let's be honest, it was janky as heck. It didn't look great. And it was just about the worst racing game that you probably could have played on the Nintendo 64, given that, you know, there was Mario Kart and Diddy Kong Racing.
And F-Zero
San Francisco Rush.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
there's so much there. But
Micro Machines.
I played Star Wars Episode One Racer and I loved the heck out of it. Even if it played that one sound clip of, you know, Anakin saying, "Now this is pod racing," over and over and over again. It was everything at the time. You know, I was a kid and it was just so much fun. Notably that game is being remastered-ish. It's being upscaled and yeah, coming and coming to Switch like next week, I think it is, which is just crazy to me. But I am 100% going to spend as much money as it takes to get that game and just have it blast, you know, "Now this is pod racing," into my ears 24/7.
Well, just on that, I feel like everyone got gypped on the best experience for Star Wars Episode One Racer, in that I was once doing work experience at the Royal Adelaide Show for high school. And my friends and I found this little spot where there was like a small like pop-up arcade there. And they had just all these different arcade machines, like, you know, your Street Fighters and stuff. But I was absolutely mystified that they had a Star Wars Episode One Racer arcade machine there. And it was freaking awesome. You sit in this little cockpit thing, and instead of controlling, you know, the pod racer with a wheel or anything like that, you literally have two thrusters that you put each hand on.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
Each thruster controls a pod. And so, you know, you pull back on one and forward with the other one, and you can turn in that direction and stuff. And it was the best. And when you boost, you quickly throw both thrusters forward to boost. And from what I remember, it actually looked really cool at the time as well. And I feel like that is the best experience you could have playing that game. And you can't play it anywhere else other than that particular machine.
I mean, you never know. They might have, you know, Joy-Con motion controls for exactly that experience on the Switch version.
I hope someone on Reddit, like, yeah, makes something like that, because my goodness.
I was surprised that they didn't do anything with the arcade thing, because I played that, I think, tons of fun. Like, something about Adelaide having this Podracer arcade machine, because it's, yeah, I only played it once because I was really bad at it. But it's one of those things, there's a few Star Wars arcade games that just never appeared on anything else, and at the time they look great. It's like, why isn't this on a console? But hopefully things have caught up, like, bring those ones back. They might suck when you're not putting tons of money into it though.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's kind of funny though when I think back to games like Shadows of the Empire and the Rogue Squadron series, because in Rogue Squadron in particular, I'm pretty sure that each entry into that small franchise has a different version of the Battle of Hoth, including Shadows of the Empire as well. And like, I just remember each time playing it, just be like, oh my God, this looks amazing. Every time I would play a new version of the Battle of Hoth. So
that's how you measure how good a Star Wars game is. How fun is the Battle of Hoth?
Yeah, it's always like the Battle of Yavin 4, the Death Star trench run, or the second Death Star run, or the Battle of Hoth. Just keep coming back in these Star Wars vehicle games, or flying games, dogfighting games, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, I mean, like, hopefully we get some new announcements for Star Wars games too. I mean, you know, we're getting into stuff that would have originally been announced at E3. You know, we've got May the 4th literally tomorrow. I mean, I'm not saying that you have to announce something, various game companies, but if you have something in the works, you know, maybe let us know.
Yeah, I worry that we're not going to get much more on the Switch other than these retro Star Wars games, because, you know, we're never going to get something like Battlefront or... what's it called? Fallen Order. That's it.
Yeah. You know, we might get the original Battlefront and Battlefront 2, so...
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's very unlikely, and I'm sure that that would not be a fun experience for anybody involved, but you never know.
You know. Yeah, like, you know, if they were able to hodge together a Rogue Squadron trilogy, holy crap. That would be the one to get. Anyway, anyone have anything else? Any last words on Star Wars on Nintendo?
I just want them to release the Lego follow-up to the rest of Clone Wars. That's the one thing that's always missing out. And I guess covering Rebels as well in Lego form. What more could you want?
Give us more Lego Star Wars games. That's all anybody really needs now.
It's a pretty good point, actually. Star Wars Lego with Clone Wars and Legends. Rebels, yeah. That's a pretty good point. Alrighty, let's move away from Star Wars and move over to the Nook spot. So, Ollie, you can take away the first item.
All right. Is anybody sick of Animal Crossing yet?
Too bad.
I feel like we're talking about it so much all the time now. But it's still getting stuff. It's still, you know, surprising people across the world. Recently, a huge update was announced. It was like 2 days after the announcement of the big Super Mario Maker 2 update, and called creatively by Nintendo the April free update. I know, it's real, like, man hours went into that name. but this is a pretty big update. It adds a lot of things that people were concerned, you know, wasn't already in the game and that was in previous games. So the two biggest ones are that there's two new NPCs that that will show up in your town every now and then. They each sort of, well, one of them comes with a holiday, but we can have the holidays in just a second. But we've got Leaf, who is the, you know, the friendly little sloth that sells you plants, and Jolly Red, who recently was up until recently was just called Red, but now is apparently a pirate with a really dodgy ship.
He's a dodgy dude.
He's a very dodgy dude. So if you go to, you'll find Red, like, hanging around your town. You can buy artworks from him, donate those artworks to the museum. Some of them just won't be real. Some of them will be haunted. I saw the other day on Twitter is that apparently there can be, like, haunted paintings. So, like, when you walk into a room, like,
I didn't even know about that.
They'll, like, move their head to face you, or, like, if you, you know, turn the lights off in your house, they'll close their eyes. So that's a fun thing. there's like the fake that's Rosetta great. Stone, like, glows at night eerily. So it's crazy. So, you know, you have to examine these things carefully and try and figure out if they're real or fake, and hopefully buy the real one. So that's a fun little thing. You know, it's an addition that has been greatly expanded on from previous games. In previous games, Red would just show up every Friday and you'd get to buy something, and it may or may not have been fake. There wasn't really any way to tell until you took it to the museum. But now, you know, you can zoom in, you can look at it, and even the fake ones are pretty hilarious. The main one is, you know, the Mona Lisa I saw the other day now has eyebrows, so that's exciting. If you've wanted a picture of Mona Lisa with eyebrows, now you can get it. So just following on from the museum stuff, though, a whole bunch of events. Nature Day is sort of already happening now. There's a whole bunch of tasks that you can complete that will earn you 5 times the amount of Nook Miles, which, as we know, is a precious currency. Right now, as well, going on is May Day. So for like the first week of May, you get an extra, like a spare ticket that you can use once, as far as I know. I haven't actually done the thing yet. But you can take that ticket to the airport and go on a special scavenger hunt featuring Rover, who is the cat that used to, you know, introduce you to your new town in previous games and was notably absent from New Horizons. So he's around now, and I look forward to getting into that when I do not have to move all of my stuff from one house to another. And then we've got International Museum Day at the end of the month, which looks to be a fun little, you know, traipse through your museum and like getting stamps and stuff. And that actually does fall on, you know, the real International Museum Day. It's pretty exciting. I think even like there was some like International Museum Association had tweeted about it. So very cool stuff that that they're doing this. Just, you know, getting you to care about museums in general. And you'll be able to go around and get a whole bunch of different stamps. And if you collect all the stamps, then you get a special surprise, according to Nintendo Australia. So let's see what that is. And then the entire month of June is wedding season. We don't know a great deal about this, apart from the fact that you'll be able to go to Harvey's Island, which is already a little bit of a nightmare, and take wedding photos of... we know that, like, Reese and Cyrus, who were the alpacas from previous games, who operated a shop called Retail, they are a married couple, and you'll be able to take anniversary photos for them. Maybe some other characters will be there. I honestly have no idea, and nobody really does. But it seems like there's going to be a whole bunch of wedding-themed furniture. So that'll be cool too. There's all sorts of other stuff, like there's shrubs and you know, what do you call it, hedges that you can get now from Leaf. It's just, there's so much stuff now. And it doesn't look like they're going to stop anytime soon, because there was a statement the other day that was basically saying that they planned on, you know, having surprising players for years to come. So, you know, this is hopefully just the first big update of many, and it is already a huge update.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're having, was it wedding day or wedding season? Or something like that, would you call it? Yeah, it'd be interesting if they have, like, funeral season.
Oh,
I wonder how that would go.
I mean, there are headstones as an item that you can get in the game.
Yeah, and there's that damn ghost that shows up and just loses its marbles.
Yeah, my God, that's a good point. Wisp is a definitely a weird one. And then you have to, you know, run around the island for 20 minutes trying to find these glowing orbs that move from place to place. Excellent fun.
Yeah, both he and Gulliver, my goodness. Just get your lives together, guys. Gosh.
I know, if you don't have enough chores to do just to keep your island up to scratch, it's just it. Then you have people just losing their stuff all over the place.
Yeah. Wisp. My goodness. Bane of my existence. Another interesting point that we'd like to talk about for the Nook spot is Star Wars Rogue One's writer, or one of the writers, Gary Widder, has created a new talk show inside Animal Crossing called Animal Talking. So we talked a little bit last episode, I believe it was, talking about some of the cool designs some people have made for some of their rooms in that Animal Crossing. Some people have made things like movie sets or little talk show rooms and things, but Gary Widder has taken it a step further and not just made a room, but also made an actual talk show that broadcasts from that room. So be sure to look into that. It's really kind of cool. Each episode goes for about an hour. He has someone playing, play in air quotes, playing music, much like, you know, Jimmy Fallon or other talk show hosts will have their own in-house musicians who play some music and things. But then they also have guests who drop by, and Gary actually interviews. So some of these guests have included Felicia Day, Naomi Kyle, and Mike Drucker, among many others. But interestingly, Gary Witter actually reached out to Reggie Fils-Aimé via Twitter and said, you know, when are we going to get you on the show? And Reggie actually seemed very interested and promptly replied, saying that he'd love to learn more about the idea. So we could very well be seeing the ex-Nintendo of America president being a guest in a Nintendo video game talk show thing. So yeah, that's what 2020 has delivered to us so far. I don't know, have you guys sort of seen any other really cool, strange ideas like this? People actually broadcasting or creating other kinds of content out of Animal Crossing, using it as a platform?
Well, just sort of following on from wedding season, I saw on Twitter the other day that there was a couple that were unable to have the wedding that they planned, so they invited friends over in Animal Crossing to have their wedding in Animal Crossing, which is just like the cutest thing I've ever seen. And you know, there have been people using it for, you know, to teach classes. It's just like it's really come at the right time for people to really have some fun in a time where, you know, there's not a lot of fun things being talked about. Yeah, it's really lovely to see these kinds of things. And you know, I haven't watched Animal Talking yet. I've been way too busy the past couple weeks. But you know, I'm very much looking forward to seeing Reggie on it, because I mean, you know, Reggie loves Animal Crossing, and we love Animal Crossing, and we all love Reggie. So
yeah, I think in about two weeks or so since the show started, it's already had 5 episodes, so it's really taken off. And yeah, going on from what you were saying about weddings and things like that happening in Animal Crossing, I've seen plenty of things like birthdays and stuff happening in Animal Crossing too earlier on, where people just getting together and beating each other with nets and things. But what about you, Paul? Have you seen anything that you've found particularly cool that people have made in Animal Crossing?
Well, both those things sound pretty cool. I unfortunately haven't had much of a chance, but then I also can't escape any time I look on the internet that I'm only one click away from Animal Crossing in some form. So it's like, it's great that it's taken off the way it has. Who would have thought that it would have been like this? It usually seemed like more of the niche thing, even though it already had a big audience. So yeah, it's really great to see how people are finding all these ways, and even just in enjoying the game as it is before they start turning it into like the next Minecraft for like alternative uses. It's yeah, it's just been really good.
All right, well, let's move into games we're playing. We'll make this one quick. So as some people might know from previous episodes, I've been playing Final Fantasy VII, the original. Finally finished that one a few days ago. You know, really enjoyed it. Great story and everything, but it was really getting to be a little bit of a chore having to do so much of the overworld stuff, like running back and forth and things. Also finished Final Fantasy XV, kind of picked that one up out of nowhere, and finally finished the last mission, which was what I was up to. Spent a weekend a couple of weeks ago just doing a whole lot of grinding just to get myself up to a good enough level to finally finish the last mission. But yeah, I've only actually played the original version of the game. I haven't gotten any of the DLC or anything like that. You know, I found the game to be extremely tedious and not particularly interesting, and the ending just completely confused me, and I don't really want to spend another $70 just to try and make sense of everything that happened. So I just watched a bunch of YouTube videos to make it clearer for me. But I've since started Final Fantasy VIII, and it's one of the Final Fantasy games that some people think is better than something like Final Fantasy VII. I've yet to kind of come to that conclusion myself. I'm kind of confused by everything that's going on in this game. Some of the mechanics just don't make sense to me. I don't understand this whole junction system that's going on there.
Oh yeah.
But I'm also just a big dummy. Like, when it comes to RPGs or JRPGs, like, anytime that they force me to start playing with numbers and stuff, like, my eyes just glaze over anyways. I don't care for these kinds of systems. I just want to kill things and move on with the story. But I've also been playing some Fortnite, again, just trying to collect skins, do all the challenges and stuff. And I think chapter 2, season 2 has just been extended to June. So that gives me a little bit more time to finally finish off some of my challenges. I'm close to doing it. I've only got like a handful left for a couple of characters. So I'm excited to finally get those done and be ready to do it all over again next season. But Paul, you're next on the list. What have you been playing?
Oh boy, hearing you playing all this Final Fantasy just reminds me of my pile of shame that just that I haven't gone back and finished Final Fantasy 15 after, because I stopped before they started doing even the free basic updates. So the game is probably quite different. Talking about things like Final Fantasy VII, the remake, I've also been playing a remake in Trials of Mana for the Vooks review, and I've been having a pretty good time with that. I'm still surprised as I was playing through it that I actually got that far way back when, because I would have used to, like, I played it when there was a fan translation, if I could say that here. But it was...
It's fine with me.
Yeah. This is something I played quite some way through, but I used to go back and go through all the characters, so I never thought I actually went that far. And going back through this is like, oh, I played the majority of the game and then went back and replayed it. It's much better than what we got from the Secret of Mana remake. I'm enjoying the combat a lot more. It's much more action orientated, but it's also just keeps that all moving a bit quicker. I'm finding that with the story, that's the thing that I get. It's hard. It's remembering that not all remakes are going to be like Final Fantasy VII, where they make quite big changes, because Trials of Mana has a lot of those story beats where it's like, well, you've just gone through this whole big story moment, and then, oh no, you're suddenly on a haunted ghost ship, and like just out of nowhere for the sake of keeping things moving along and to introduce characters, but it has no real bearing on the story. So there's a lot of those really weird out of nowhere moments, but it's been fun to go back, and there's nothing like reviewing a game to actually force you to have to play a game all the way through. So it's been good. On top of that, been playing Moving Out, which is also a nice game to be playing for something different. That's just plain fun, really. There's only so much I can really say about that besides you just have fun playing it. It's something that's great for when you are able to have more people around. If you're after something after Overcooked and all of those other co-op games, it's definitely worth getting into if you didn't buy it straight away already. And
if I can just quickly jump in there. Yeah, we've actually got the Moving Out review up. Andrew Sells of the site has reviewed it for Vooks, so go check it out. And the Trials of Mana review, you said that you're doing it. Do you know roughly when that might come out?
Should be hitting sometime this week, ideally. It's probably what I'm going to be doing after this to finish it up. And then the last thing is just Picross, the most recent one. I think it's the fourth one by now. I kind of lose track of that. It's more Picross. You should get it. There's nothing more I should have to say about that. Get more Picross, people.
Picross is good. Ollie, what about you?
Well, I will keep it very quick. I finished the Final Fantasy VII Remake and absolutely loved it, and was also extremely confused about it because it has been like 15 years since I consumed any Final Fantasy VII content. So I have no idea what's going on, and I am completely in love with the idea of not knowing what the hell is happening. I have also been playing a lot of Super Mario Maker 2. As I mentioned earlier, this got a huge update. I think it was like last week, maybe the week before. Again, time is meaningless. Nobody knows what day it is. But it added so much stuff, new power-ups. So I have been crafting up some absolutely dreadful levels for everybody to enjoy. I haven't actually published any of them yet. I'm still in the testing phase of quite a few of them. But I can promise that if you play any of my levels, I am very sorry. Because it is not going to be fun for you. And it was...
Are you making... Are you making your own world?
I am, yeah. That was my sort of main incentive for actually, you know, starting on some ideas that I've had rattling around in my head since the game released. But then, like, you know, there's new things like the frog power up, which you can run on water, but you have to be keeping pea speed through the entire time. So I've found some fun ways to make that just an absolute nightmare for the player. So again, if you get any of my levels in you know, super expert, I'm sorry, but also I had great fun playing it and making it, and every downvote is a badge of honor for me. So enjoy.
That's awesome. Well, you should definitely publish those in the Vooks Discord. And I've been wanting to make some levels in Mario Maker as well. I've never really actually done it. I've played both games a little bit, just enough to get through some of the story stuff, you know, quote story stuff. But yeah, maybe I should make some of my own stages and share them in the Vooks Discord community.
Speaking of, if you want to join the Vooks Discord community, it is bit.ly/ Vooks Discord, or you can just go onto the website and search for Discord. You should be able to find it pretty easy. But yeah, we always enjoy having new people in there. We have a thriving Animal Crossing community that likes to trade and put their prices in. I don't think there's been a single week since the game released where people weren't, you know, offering up, you know, come to my island and, you know, sell your turnips for 500 bells a piece. So, yeah, join us. We're fun people. And there's plenty of us making horrible levels and also having fun in Animal Crossing.
Absolutely. All right, let's start bringing this one home. eShop recommendations. So kind of light on notable things on sale, but my pick would have to be Cuphead, which is again down to $22.49, which so it's 25% off. I've yet to finish the game, but the game has incredible music. Really, really love the music, love the art style. Super hard-ish, I guess. Like, I haven't really had much of a problem playing it. I know some people, you know, might lead them to just banging their head against the wall for an hour or so, but I find that I'm able to get through each boss, you know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes, which is about, 20, 30 tries or something like that at a time. You just got to be patient. I treat it more like a puzzle game rather than a hardcore action game or a shooter or something like that. It's just like, you know, more like a rhythm puzzle game that's all about timing is how I've sort of approached it. Ollie, what about your recommendations?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Splatoon 2 is 33% off right now, so you can pick that up for $53. You know, there's a free demo right now, so, you know, hop into that, give it a go. If you like it, pick it up. $53 is a pretty good price for the game. I bought it digitally, so I paid like $80 for it on day one. So $53, very good deal. Also, Yooka-Laylee is like 66% off, so you can pick it up for $20. I know that this was like a bit of a panned release when it first came out, but I went and played it on Switch a few months back when it was at a sort of similar price range, and I thought it was really enjoyable. So, you know, if you're into sort of that Banjo-Kazooie era of platforming, as long as you don't go into it expecting, you know, mind-breaking, you know, modern level design, then like you're gonna have so much fun with it. And for $20, like I really cannot recommend it enough.
But also Playtonic has continued to update that game and keep it with fresh content. Like they just this week I got it because I was a backer on the game years ago on its Kickstarter. But just like, you know, I get all the backer updates and stuff, and this week they were talking about how they just released their new N64 filter. Yeah. So like the characters, like, yeah, just look like N64 characters and things like that, like as if, you know, it was made for N64 back in the Banjo-Kazooie Mario 64 days. So there's still content that comes for that game.
Yeah, and they seem to be pretty dedicated to making it. So like even, you know, when it first released on Switch, there were still some issues with the camera and a couple other things to do with progression that like felt a bit jank and wasn't really clear where to go. But they've just been absolutely hard at work improving it since the day it released. So yeah,
it's despite the fact they even made a sequel.
Yeah,
and they've still gone back and supported the first game. So yeah, Paul, yours.
All right, I've got Star Wars Pinball, which, like, yeah, the Zen Studios always does a decent job with pinball. It's usually $45, it's $31.50, but there's also, given May the 4th and all, it's I believe, Jedi Academy and Jedi Knight to Jedi Outcast. I think I have that string of words correct. But yeah, they're both also on sale. I think it's like $3 off of Jedi Knight 2, and the Jedi Knight Academy is still in the around $30 or so, which I really should have looked up beforehand, but I only just saw them on my Switch eShop not long ago. But if you really want old school kind of tough Star Wars games, they're definitely worth it.
Also, awesome. they've updated them to be quite nice to play, because they were very jank beforehand, and they're pretty good to play now, just anecdotally.
Do we know if Star Wars Pinball can be played in Tate mode with like a flip grip, like vertically?
Yeah, it should. I haven't actually tried it with a flip grip because it means I've actually got to trap the flip grip down, but it should do.
I'm pretty certain because like it's made by the lovely people at Zen.
Pinball FX does it.
And
they're pinball purists over there.
Yeah. And like the other two big games that they have, which is Pinball FX and Zen Pinball, both have that capability. So I'd imagine this has it too.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'd say it's highly likely.
I've been wanting some games to actually play with my flip grip, and I've been looking at shooters, and I don't see enough of them on sale. Like, you know, Ikaruga, I still haven't picked that one up. I'm waiting for that to go on sale. But Star Wars Pinball is looking pretty good, and it's in Tate mode. I might have to hit that one up. Quickly moving over to the release forecast now. On May 7, we've got Fledgling Heroes, which, Paul, you were reviewing for Maxi Geek, friend of ours. Yep. Any good?
It's worth checking out. It's like you can check it out on Apple Arcade, but if you don't have that, it's like, yeah, it's a good price. It's a charming little, like, great art style. It's a short burst game to muck about with, like, loads of stuff to do in it. If you really like the gameplay, it's a side scrolling, like, I guess, as I was saying before, it's not quite Flappy Birds. It's a platformer where you're flying around. It's really neat, and yeah, you can also probably cut a bit of that out. Sorry.
Also, just worth mentioning that it is a an Australian developed game from Subtle Boom, headed up by the wonderful Brendan Watts. So always good to support Australian developers.
Yeah. So that's on May 7. So maybe check that one out if you're interested. May 12 is Star Wars Episode 1 Racer. And on May 14, we've got Oddworld Munch's Odyssey, the old Xbox original classic. But apart from that, that's all we have for you this week. So again, make sure to check the site, vooks.net, for our latest review on Moving Out by Andrew, for Paul's upcoming review on Trials of Mana. Be sure to check out the Vooks Discord. Ollie, what's the link to that again?
It is bit.ly/VooksDiscord.
Awesome. And jump on there and sell them turnips. Ollie, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Chocobalt, Chocobalt.
And Paul, where can people find you?
This time I've looked it up beforehand. It's at Captain Paul Blues, which is CaptPaulBlues.
Awesome. And I'm at Mangello. That's MANJELL0. Thanks, guys, for joining me this week, and we'll see you next fortnight. Bye-bye.